Your energy, I'm energy. This phone is energy. Your kids are energy. The boss, everybody is energy. And when you show up energetically in a different way, people respond to that.
Welcome, and this is Far Betterment. Welcome and thank you for joining me on another episode of Far Betterment, the podcast where we learn new things about old friends and old things about new friends. First of all, I wanted to thank everybody who's been listening, who's been downloading, who's been subscribing, and also those of you that have been rating the podcast. Those things help us so much, and I can't tell you guys how grateful I am for all of you that have taken the time out of your day to do that and to listen and to rate us. So thank you guys for doing that. And I just want to let you guys know how much that helps us and how very appreciative I am. That helps us stay on the charts and it helps us stay visible by staying on the charts. And it also lets us know that you guys are enjoying what we're doing here on Far Betterment. So I can't thank you guys enough. And if you haven't rated, if you haven't subscribed, if you haven't downloaded, if you haven't listened, please do so. I enjoy doing this for you guys every week, and I really appreciate all the support, so thank you. This week, I'm joined by Denise Dominguez. Denise is an incredibly brave and strong person. She has gone through some very difficult things, and she talks about those difficult things, and that's not easy to do in public, and Denise and I talked a little bit about that and how she, you know, her main focus and motivation is to help others and to help other people who've been in abusive relationships to get out of those and to realize their self-worth. So I thank her so much for coming on and doing that. I hope this helps a lot of people, and I hope that her words make a difference. And I know they will, because she's made a difference in many, many people's lives already. So without further ado, here's Denise Dominguez for Far Betterment. Hi, is this Denise?
It is.
Hi, Denise. This is Andrew from Far Betterment.
Hi, can you hear me good?
Yes, I can. How are you doing?
Perfect. I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. Thank you for asking. It's been a busy day, so I'm finally kind of able to sit back here.
Winding down.
Yes, yeah, definitely. I didn't know if you had any questions for me or if you just wanted to jump right in. And
No questions. We can jump right in. I'm open to discuss anything. So whatever you have, I'm willing to share. And yeah, I've done these interviews before, so I kind of know what to expect.
Oh, perfect. Well, all right, let's just jump right in then. Why don't we just start from the beginning? You know, where are you from? And, you know, things like that, just kind of the start of Denise.
Okay, so my name is Denise Dominguez, and I am originally from South Florida, Miami, Fort Lauderdale area, where I was born and raised. And when that's where I was married and had two children and raised them up until about high school age, the beginning of college age. And that's when I left Florida, left my toxic relationship and moved here to North Carolina. And that was 2011. And I've pretty much been here ever since. It's a, you know, that whole breakup, let's get back together story from 2011 to 2012. But I've been here ever since. So I'm now engaged to be married, and my kids are in their 20s. Very hard to believe. they grow up so fast. And I have my own business. It's a coaching, speaking, and I write books. And my business is all about helping women heal after the same type of a relationship that I had, which was toxic and abusive and disempowering. and I get to work from home and have freedom, and I have two puppies that are also growing up so fast, Mina and Scooby, and I'm enjoying life. Life is so good, and now I get to talk to you.
Well, first of all, congratulations. That's incredible
to hear.
Yeah, I'm very happy for you. And it sounds like it took a lot of healing to get to the point where, you know, you could be in that type of relationship again, you know, a committed relationship. And there's probably a lot of trust there that had
Absolutely.
To be built. How did you mm-hmm. overcome all that? And really, do you want to take us through that relationship before, and I don't want to ask too many like personal questions, but you know, whatever you want to answer, if you want to talk about that a little bit.
Absolutely. So I was really young when I got married. I was 21, 19 when we started dating, mm-hmm. and 21 when we got married. Had our first child at 22, second one at 23, very, very young. I mean, you know, in our early 20s, we're just clueless.
Yes.
And, yeah. And so, you know, when you come from an emotional abusive home, you don't think there's anything abnormal about that. You think that that's the normal, that's what a relationship looks like. And that was my experience. So when I was growing up, I was raised with two parents who yelled at each other and criticized each other and, you know, had emotional abuse and things like that. And so I didn't think it was, I thought that's what a relationship was. So when I got married and the same things were occurring, it was normal to me, right? No, I didn't like it, you know, things like that, but I really didn't know anything else. So when I started to get older and more mature and realized like, wow, this is not good for my kids. It hurt me to see my kids see us arguing and fighting and things escalated, you know, physical sometimes. There was a lot of traumas and dramas as the kids got older. There was drug abuse involved. And, you know, that takes you down a whole another path. And witnessing my children seeing that hurt me. And then I started to realize, like, this is so unhealthy. This is toxic. Had no clue what the absolute truth really was at that time. In fact, I didn't even know what the absolute truth was until I was out of the relationship for a few years. Again, because there was no physical or sexual abuse involved, I didn't know that it was abuse. And so that was really like the catalyst of me working my way out of the relationship. So when we have kids, I mean, you know, they're everything to us and we want the best for them. And when you see them in pain, you see them hurting, it changes everything for you. So that was the start of me looking to leave this relationship because it was so not only bad for me, but my kids were seeing awful things. So when they were teenagers, in fact, in 2008 was the biggest trauma that we all had experienced. And that was when my then husband had attempted to take his life with our 14-year-old daughter in the next room. And earlier that day, I told him that I wanted a divorce. And I had told him that many, many, many times before. But like I said, the accumulation of the drug abuse and all the things leading up to that is what led to, I believe, is what led to that day. Because when somebody is self-medicating, it brings on a whole slew of other things going on. So it brought on depression, it brought on anxiety, it brought on like all this other stuff. So that was August of 2008. And again, my kids were going through something, seeing their dad like this, seeing me like that. And that day, like I said, I had asked for a divorce. I was ready to leave the relationship. But because that happened, I almost visualize it as like, I got sucked back in, right? Not how can I leave him now, right? Because now I thought to myself, what kind of a mom would I be if I leave their dad in the biggest time of need, his biggest vulnerability? And I just felt like my kids would hate me, essentially. So I didn't leave again. So that led to another 2 years, 3 years of more ups and downs, traumas and dramas. So that takes us to 2011, and another incident happened, not quite as bad as that one, but another traumatic event happened, which that was it. Like at that point, here we are back in the hospital again. Here we are with the drug use again. Here we are, kind of history's repeating itself again. It had only been 2.5 years later. And that was the point where I was like, I can't do this anymore. This is just not healthy for anybody. I got to get out. And at that time, our daughter was graduating high school and my son was right behind her. So that's when I finally took the plunge and left. And that was 2011 when I came here the first time, here to North Carolina the first time. So that was very codependency relationship. So my dependency on him was the financial piece. So he was always the breadwinner. I ran his business, but he was always the financial person. And so I was really, really scared to leave that relationship. That was part of one of the biggest reasons, right? Like, how am I going to make it on my own? Mm-hmm. What am I going to do? Where am I going to live? Things like that. And when 2011 came and I was just literally fed up, and I took that plunge and I left, it didn't take long before my fears started to creep in and like, Denise, you're financially on your own for the first time in over 20 years, right? All of those thoughts came creeping in. So 3 months later, when the call started to come in, we have over 20 years together. I love you. We have a family, you know, that whole let's get back together story. I left. I left North Carolina, went back to Florida to quote unquote try it again. And we all know how that ends.
Unfortunately.
Right. It's always the same. And that was 8 months of being back in Florida and then doing it all over again. So coming back here to North Carolina, which leads us to 2012. And from that point on, I never left North Carolina again, never went back. So that's like the bullet point of what happened and how I ended up here and why I ended up here. The toxicity was just overflowing. So that's what led me to being here.
How did your kids process this, especially, you know, being in the next room as a 14-year-old? I mean, that's a pivotal time in your adolescence, not to mention your life, period. Did they ever talk to you about that or?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I took them to therapy, counseling. And this is what I share with women. You know, I was always putting myself on the back burner. I was always making sure the kids were taken care of and he was taken care of. So yeah, I got them therapy immediately because I know more now, but I knew at the time, like that was just a huge traumatic event that needed to be given attention to. So I took them to therapy and counseling as much as I could, because you can lead the horse to the water, but you can't make the horse drink the water, right? Mm-hmm. The effects of that is my daughter still deals with depression and anxiety. It's not as bad as it used to be, but she's gone through many, many years of dealing with this with no medication, no chemical medication. My son, he's still, you know, very hurt by this. He's 25, she's 26. He deals with it in a different way. Right now, neither one of them are in counseling, but my daughter has gotten counseling on her own. My son chooses not to. My son is pretty much a carbon copy of his dad. So I did what I could when they were younger to get them counseling to start the healing process. I'll have to say, at this point right now, my daughter's doing a lot better on the healing journey than my son is, meaning she's sought out therapy after I got them therapy. She reads self-help books and she tries. She's on a plant-based diet, and for the past 3 years, so she does try to continue the healing, because she's the one who was in the next room as him when that happened.
Yeah.
So that there's, and the other thing is that healing, no matter what we've been through, healing is a process. It's those peeling of the layers. It's not an overnight thing. So it gets better with time. Because I remember you had mentioned, how did I get in this relationship now? Mm-hmm. That was, once I found out the truth of what actually happened, meaning I was an abused woman, I was in an abusive relationship, that's when, like, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And then I realized all those times when I was getting them therapy and them help and not me, I took a step back and spent 18 months hardcore with healing my inner wounds. I still do it now to this day because that's the business I'm in. I just love it. But I did take 18 months of me solely focusing on me and healing all of those past traumatic events and traumas, and including, you know, the childhood stuff too. Because the thing is that we don't get into these types of relationships on accident. Like I said, I came from an emotional abusive home, so it was familiar, which led me to an emotional abusive relationship. So when I say healing, I mean the whole thing.
Yeah. Now, how did you come to that realization? Like, what was that aha moment for you that you realized, like, oh my gosh, I'm in an abusive relationship. I have to get out.
Well, so when I moved to North Carolina, mm-hmm. Like I said, I ran his business in Florida and I did it successfully, which was a huge confidence booster for me. I was like, holy crap, I can do this. And when I moved here, obviously, I wasn't running his business. I wanted my own business, which led me to getting into a one-year program with a business coach. Prior to that, I had no idea what coaches did. I had no idea that you can hire a coach for anything. So in that year program, the personal growth is sprinkled in there along with your business coaching. And my business coach at the end of the program was like, get these women on the phone for 15 minutes, to get them into your program, yada, yada, yada. Well, how was I supposed to help a woman heal when I wasn't healed myself? So that led me to stop getting on the phone with women and trying to help them when I needed to help myself, which led me to getting hiring an empowerment coach for myself, which led me to a lot of peeling, shedding, and healing, and realizing, holy crap, the truth, right? Mm. So all of these steps led to, you know, it's kind of like a trail of breadcrumbs, led me to where I needed to be to discover the absolute truth. So it was in my program with my empowerment coach and doing the exercises with her and finding my truth of me being abused in an abusive relationship.
What do you, this might be a difficult question to answer, but you said your son's kind of a carbon copy of his father. How do you speak to him now, being on the other side? How do you convey your concerns to him, or do you?
That's a great question, because of the fact that he is just like his dad, we had a very estranged relationship for years. And then he started to come around and wanted to talk to me. And so when that happened, I set very strong boundaries with him, because the relationship that he has with me and the relationship he has with his dad are two total different entities. So with me, he knows what he can say and what he can't say, what I will accept and what I, you know, won't. It's very hard. So he's like his dad, which is the narcissistic personality disorder. It's hard to have a relationship with somebody like that, but he's my son. So I'm always going to have a relationship with him. So to answer your question directly, I don't express my concerns directly to him because I can't. He won't hear them. I leave space for him to come to me and ask me questions, or if he needs advice or anything, and then I'll be there for him. But if I, like, the conversation that I have with him and my daughter are two totally different conversations. So I have to just be careful with the conversations I have with him. And when he's ready, he'll ask me and I'll be there. But yeah, there's no like deep layers or connections when you're dealing with this personality disorder, because everything is about them. They know better than you. Their stories are worse than you. His wounds are deeper, things like that. So there's really no getting through to him. Mm-hmm. So I just have to wait until he comes to me and asks me.
Does he recognize that in himself, or is that kind of muted by the narcissism, I guess?
No, he doesn't. No. He sees it in other people. He sees it in his dad, but he doesn't see it in himself. And that's the way it goes with narcissistic personality. They'll see it in other people, but they don't see it in themselves ever.
What do you think is the separation between them, your brother, or not your brother, your son and your daughter? What do you think separates them as far as the way they handled things or the way that they deal with things?
The emotional part. Mm-hmm. So my daughter is very connected to emotions. She'll cry. She has empathy. She has compassion, where he doesn't. There's like almost like an emotional cut off with him. So it takes a lot for him to feel, you know, have those emotions, where she can feel the emotions more easily or quickly. So they have a relationship together. I wouldn't say they're super close, but as close as you can be, because she knows the truth about her brother as well. I would say as close as they can be as siblings. And she also knows how to deal with him too. So it's not like, you know, calling him up and sharing her, you know, today I had a bad day and I need you to listen to me or whatever. It's not like that at all. She knows that that's not something that she could do. So I would say it's the emotional piece between the two of them, how they deal with their own emotions with each other.
So as a mom, as, you know, a woman who's been in and then out of an abusive relationship, how does that make you feel with your son? How does that make, does it make you feel concerned for other women who might be in a relationship with him? Do you feel compassion because he is not recognizing this in himself? Or do you feel kind of, does it kind of take you back to where you were with your former husband?
That's a great question. My healing journey continues every day. I'm working on myself and I keep healing and I keep healing. And I've come to a place where I know that we all have our own journey to live and lead. And I know that including my two children, they have theirs too. And there's nothing that I can do to change his mind or persuade him to go get help or whatever. He has to figure it out on his own. The types of girls he has, like he has a girlfriend now, they are a lot like his dad too.
Okay.
He attracts those types of girls that are, emotionally unstable. And so, yes, I feel sorry for them, but I have to take a step back and let everybody figure out their own stuff. Because, the more you push your knowledge or your knowings on other people, the more they resist it. Right? Especially with kids.
Absolutely.
The more I tell them what to do, then the more they're going to resist it. So I literally take a step back and let everybody figure, especially now they're in their 20s, let them figure it out on their own. If they come to me and ask me questions or advice, then absolutely I'm there. I'll lead them or guide them in whatever they need. So that all came with my own healing. Because if you would have asked me that 5 years ago, 7 years ago, that very question you just asked, mm-hmm. I would have been in tears. Because I would have been like, I want so desperately, for my kids to, X, Y, and Z. And I know, I'm trying so hard. And I would have been in tears answering that question. But because of my own healing journey, I'm able to have that space and take a step back and let them figure it out for themselves. Because I know that we all have our own path to lead, including them, including our own children.
That's really that's really an interesting point you bring up, because I think myself as a parent, especially, my kids are still young. I've got a 9-year-old, a 3-year-old, mm-hmm. and a 2-year-old. So there's plenty of time for me to do damage or repair, or I've got mm-hmm. a few years. But I've often wondered, and my wife and I have talked about this, what would we do when our kids are, mm-hmm. 20, when our kids are 25, 30 years old? Mm-hmm. How do we give out advice without interjecting ourselves into their lives?
Right.
I think that's incredibly, it's very profound, I guess, to me. To hear some, a parent who's been through such a difficult situation recognize this in their kid and then say, I can't do anything. I have to let them live their lives. I mean, that's like, it's kind of an incredible thing for me to hear as a parent.
Well, let me touch on that a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Because when the more I heal myself, it's healing is a ripple, has a ripple effect. It's like throwing that pebble in the middle of the lake, mm-hmm. and that one small pebble ripples out through the whole lake. It's the same thing. So the more I work on myself and you and your wife and any parent, the more that ripples out to the people closest to you. Because having a relationship with somebody with a narcissistic personality disorder is very, very difficult. And I don't have a relationship with my ex, reasons being, but we're talking about my son, so yeah. It's totally different. But the more I work on myself, the more it ripples out to them. So my son has come to me and asked me, okay, Mom, I need some coaching, which I would never, ever dream that he would ever say those words to me. But because I keep working on myself, and that's the key to every relationship, whether we're talking parent-child, spouse, any relationship, that is the key to work on yourself, not the other person. Because what we commonly do is we point the finger at the other person, right? Even coworkers and bosses, there's a lot of narcissistic personalities in corporate America. Newsflash, in case anybody didn't know. Just thought I'd give you that breaking news.
You heard
news,
it here
Andrew.
First.
Right. Any relationship that you have, that is the key. Now, people will say, Denise, that doesn't make sense. Wonder if I'm working with a jerk boss and this and that. I understand. But I'm telling you, that is the key. Here's the thing. We make everything so complicated. We like to complicate. It can't be that easy. Mm-hmm. It can't be that easy. Yes, it is. It really, truly, and deeply is. All you have to do is work on yourself, and you'll see the difference in other people because, A, we're all energy, right? Your energy, I'm energy. This phone is energy. Your kids are energy. The boss, everybody is energy. And when you show up energetically in a different way, people respond to that. It's like when we go to a concert that we've been really excited to go, you know, see, I don't know, Garth Brooks or somebody, and we walk into the stadium and you feel that energy of everybody so happy. It's very light and it like, it overcomes you, right? Because mm-hmm. you're just, it's great, right? You've been looking forward to this. You're happy. Everybody there is happy. That is the light, a light energy. And then let's flip that for a second. You know, I know you've heard this term before. You walk into a room and you say, or you feel, holy crap, I could cut the tension with a knife in here. What happened? Right? That's energy as well. That's negative energy. So when you keep showing up as the best version of you, it's a ripple effect out to the people around you. So that the jerk boss will even respond differently. Because why? Because you're responding differently. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Yeah. I really like that line of thinking, actually. I guess I haven't really looked at it that way. How did you get to that point? How did you get to the point where you, was it just through being with your coach, or was it, you know, things that you read, things that you looked at, or just kind of like reflecting on yourself and realizing it?
I would say it's a combination of everything. Mm-hmm. So I've had coaches, number one, I've had coaches.
Okay.
And yeah. And also I tell my clients, when I coach them, I reap the benefits just as much as they are. And it's true. It's like, you know, just like you doing this podcast, you're learning just as much as you're providing the learning for your audience. Same thing. When I'm coaching my clients, I'm reaping the benefits of being there, sharing their energies, teaching them something, because repetition is how we learn. So when I go over something about trust or forgiveness or self-love or truth over and over and over again, it's being seeped into my subconscious mind, as well as that's what I'm doing for them. So I would say, to answer your question, it's a combination of everything. It's the books that I've read. It's the coaching that I've had. It's the coaching that I do. It's everything that has led me to this awareness. You know, it's like, you know, they call it a spiritual awakening. So it's led me to this spiritual awakening.
Now, can you describe for me, just, I guess, since we're talking about the audience and stuff, could you describe for me the differences between, this is probably going to be kind of a broad question, but between your, you know, former relationship and now, you know, you're about to get married again, your new relationship is, mm-hmm. is completely different, it sounds like. But maybe so that people can recognize, oh my gosh, I'm in an abusive relationship. Maybe I need to start looking at things as well.
That's great. Well, the biggest thing I would say is how I show up now versus how I showed up before. So energetically, of course. Mm-hmm. So when I showed up in that relationship, again, I was really, really young. So there was a lot of childlike behaviors that I had. And like energy attracts like energy, right? So he showed up in childlike energy. But then what happened was, as the years went on, especially when I became a mom to my children, the roles started to twist and turn. So I was so used to being in that mom role that my then husband was more and more in his child role, and I was more and more parenting him. So it's almost like I was being his mom. It's not almost, I was mothering him. And the more I mothered him, the more he showed up in child energy. So when you think of drug abuse, that's total child energy, right? The whole irresponsible, I don't care about myself, or I don't care about other people. That's total child energy. When you think about narcissistic behaviors or traits, that's child energy as well. Everything's about me, 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 me. And if I don't get my way, I'm going to pout. That's total child energy. When you think about mother energy, she is the one who loves too much, gives too much, right? She's a busy bee. She does everything for everybody. She tries to please everybody, right? She wants to be liked by everybody. So that was me. I was taking on that role of being the one who took care of everybody, and food is love, and take care of everything. And so that's how our roles were. And for the audience, when you have attracted in your relationship, especially if we're talking spousal, narcissistic personality or the traits of a narcissist, that's an indicator that they're showing up in mother energy or parent energy, because there's men out there who attract narcissistic women as well. So that's when you know that you're showing up in that parent energy. And once you have that awareness, this is key, because then you're like, oh, okay, well, now I know what's going on, or what's quote unquote wrong. Then you can start to work on that, so you can start to show up differently, so that the person you're dealing with shows up differently. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And actually, it brings up another question for me. Was that difficult to put into practice, taking care of yourself first? I mean, I guess I'll use myself as an example. And this is just something from therapy for myself. I was, a therapist pointed out to me that I don't feel like I'm worthy of having my needs met. And it sounds like you kind of felt that way as well. Correct me if I'm wrong. But you sounded like you took care of everybody else first. You wanted to make a happy home, and you thought that if you did, things would work out. And did you feel guilt at all taking care of yourself, or was it just that you were trying to just keep everything in order?
So the first thing I want to point out is that the I am not enough is the biggest human disease we all carry. We all have that. I'm not enough. So that's across the board. And which leads to like the low self-worth, the low self, you know, self-esteem and confidence and self-love and all of that. But for me, in my journey, that came after I was out of that relationship, the past, and in my new relationship. And luckily, I'm in a relationship with somebody who gives me that space. So there's a lot of respect between us. So he knows what I do, and he gives me that space to continue to work on myself. So a lot of people do think that if I put myself first, I'm being selfish. Mm-hmm. But here's how I like to explain it to them. First of all, you cannot pour from an empty cup. So when you fill your cup up first, then you can pour from that, which means that I'll use myself as an example. I'm the best, you know, wife to be that I can be, the best partner I can be. If my kids were younger, I'd be the best mom I can be. So the mom that I used to be would definitely pour from an empty cup. So she was frazzled, running around like a chicken with no head. And guess what happened at the end of the day? She was frustrated, right? She was pissed off. She was like, nobody, you know, gives me this or that or their attention, and this, because I never demanded it. I never asked for it. I was always pouring and giving and giving and giving. Of course people are going to take advantage of you. It's just human nature. But when you have, so self-love is also boundaries. When you have that self-love and you put yourself first and you pour from a cup runneth over, that's also, people know, because you do that, because it's self-love, it's not selfish, people know what they can, quote unquote, get away with you, and what their boundaries are with you, right? So like the person that I used to be, who did everything for everybody, nobody would ask me those things anymore, right? Because they know, mm-hmm. like that's not even me anymore. So I like to give the visuals to help people understand. First of all, we all have that disease in us. I'm not enough. And then we all think that we have to give and for validation and acceptance and all that, when it's actually the opposite. You have to give yourself the attention and the love, and then it pours out of you to the people around you. Does that make sense?
Yes, quite a bit, actually.
Good. Awesome. It's a parent thing too, right? Mm-hmm. It's like once we have kids, all we want to do is like give to them. And a lot of times, unfortunately, we give too much. And, you know, what, getting back to narcissistic personalities, that is a personality that's created in childhood, right? Nobody's born like that. They're created through childhood. So like, for example, the kid that's put on a pedestal and mom and dad just praise this child, maybe it's an only child, and they praise this child and he or she is the best thing ever. And they, if they brought home an A paper, it was just like, whoa, let's have a party, right? Then if everything is about them in childhood, nothing in their mind is going to change when they're in adulthood. Everything's always been about me. Why would that change, right?
Yeah.
And parents don't realize they're doing this. They don't. And then on the flip side of that, where nothing was about the child. So maybe we're talking about neglect or abuse or divorce or, you know, parent that wasn't there. Nothing was about the child. So then they decide, not everybody, because everybody has a choice and a fork in the road, but sometimes they decide, well, you know what? Screw that. Nothing was about me when I was a kid. I'm making things about me because now I'm an adult and I'm going to make sure that everything is about me. So the attention's on me. You know, they're overachievers, right? Getting back to the corporate America, CEOs and presidents and all of that. They're proving themselves to everybody. They have to do that to validate to themselves that they're somebody, because in childhood they were nobody. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And I guess it brings up another interesting point. I know this is probably going to be a difficult question to answer because I don't think there's a correct answer or a correct way to bring this up to somebody, but how do you tell somebody they're narcissists and make them recognize it? How do you recognize that in yourself if you're kind of like wondering, you know, do I have some of these tendencies or qualities, or is that something that you just can't recognize?
That's a great question. No.
I thought no. That might be it, but
yeah. So they don't, like I said, they'll see it in other people, but they don't see it in themselves. Now, if somebody, because I've had people like message me on Facebook or ask me like, Denise, I think I am a narcissist. If somebody says that to me, that's easy. I can distinguish that easy, because if they do recognize it in themselves, what that means is they have narcissistic traits, but that doesn't mean that they're a narcissist. Because if they see those behaviors in themselves, that's where the empathy and the compassion is coming in, right? They're like, oh shit, maybe mm-hmm. I am a bat, or you know, I think of only myself, or I'm being selfish or something like that. So then they recognize that in themselves. So then I know that no, they don't have like the narcissistic personality disorder. They have picked up traits, most likely from parents. Growing up, being around it, right? Mm-hmm. I definitely had. I mean, being with somebody for 22 years, there's, you have, of course, I had narcissistic traits. But I learned all about that about myself, right? Like, I picked up lying because he was such a pathological liar. So I learned how to lie. And I was actually just telling my fiance the other day, I'm still unraveling that. Like, sometimes it'll be like the smallest little white lie. And I think to myself, why'd you just say that, Denise? That's not true. So I'm still unraveling those behaviors. 22 years is a long time to be with, you know, that set of behaviors and then, you know, peel, shed, and heal them away. So that's the difference.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
I guess that is very hard to, like, come to terms with being or having those qualities. I think that's probably pretty hard for people to understand because, you know, it's nobody wants to be that way, obviously.
No.
Even people who are probably don't want to be that way.
No.
Do you, or I don't know, maybe you don't have a relationship with your former husband now. I imagine that's difficult though, since you have kids, but what does a healthy relationship look like with your former husband versus, you know, no relationship at all?
That is healthy.
Yeah. Okay.
That is healthy because again, I can't change him.
Yeah.
Nor do I want to. And I know that for the best interest of me and my kids is to have no relationship with him at all, because I know I can't have a healthy relationship with him. And to be quite honest, if I was to try and have a relationship with him, I don't know, because I have had no contact with him since 2012, but I suspect that I would go back into that mother energy, that mother archetype, and try to mother him and try to save him and try to rescue him, because he's the father of my children. So the healthy relationship with him is no contact. Now, he says things about me or to me through our kids, which both of my kids give me two different, like my daughter, he says nice things about me to our daughter. And then my son says something different. It doesn't matter. I don't know what, you know, it is what it is. But that's part, also part of the manipulation piece. But I mean, that's the only way I can have a healthy relationship with him, is no contact.
Now, how do you,
no contact at all.
How do you convey that to somebody who's in that type of relationship and they're not ready to cut that off yet?
I would say, how do you feel when you have contact with them versus when you don't? Because our body is always talking to us. So most likely when we have, like, just even thinking about having contact with him, like I said, I feel like, I don't know for sure, but I feel like I would go back into that rescue mother energy, which is no good for me, because now it takes, you know, I'm focusing on somebody else and trying to change somebody else, which I know is impossible. So I would say, how does it feel to be in touch or in contact with that person? Listen to your body versus not. Because the old Denise had stomach issues, depression, anxiety, and chronic headaches. Guess what Denise doesn't have anymore?
Yeah,
and a lot of women that I know that have been in these relationships, unfortunately, because they're so toxic, they've taken on that toxicity. They create a dis-ease in their body. So the research is being done now, but breast cancer in women, autoimmune diseases are being related or direct correlation to abusive relationships. So again, you have to fill your cup up first.
Yeah.
If you keep giving, 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 and you're trying to save somebody and you're risking and literally putting your health at risk, your life, who does that benefit?
Yeah.
Right?
That's a great point, yeah.
Yeah.
Now, how often have you run into men in these situations?
I get messages. So here's the thing about men.
Mm-hmm.
You guys are great, but you're not very emotional.
I could see that.
You don't express yourselves the way women do. Women are more open to, I guess maybe because I'm a woman, I don't know if I was a man, that a man would be more open to contacting a man. Mm-hmm. I think it'd be the same. But women are more open to, you know, women I don't even know, and say, I hear your stories, or I see your posts, and it relates to me, and I wanted to reach out, da 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 da. I've had men, few men, that have reached out to me and said, I've been through this relationship where I'm divorcing my wife, and that's how she was. And here's the thing. Those guys are amazing. They're great catches for women. But what I see, and I'm guilty of it too, because I did it too, is we say we want the nice guy that's going to treat us good, but they're not packaged the way that we want them to be packaged. So we go for like the bad boy type of look. And guess what you get when you go for the bad boy look? You get the bad boy, right? Mm-hmm. So I've even had a few men clients. My focus is women, and I talk to women, but I've had men contact me. But the way I say it is they are peppered in my clientele and reaching out to me. So the majority of it is because, you know, they don't want to admit like a woman treated them like that, you know, because it kind of, you know, emasculates them as a man, right? Makes them feel like, yeah. So they don't want to admit that. But unfortunately, what happens is unless they heal themselves, they're going to keep attracting those types of women or relationships, those types of relationships. And most likely, their mom was like that. And that's why they're attracting women like that. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And so how did you get to the point where you thought, you know what, I have a lot of valuable information myself. I've learned a lot. I want to help other people. I'm going to start coaching and obviously writing books and, you know, helping them that way as well. How did you get to that point?
My healing journey. Mm-hmm. So going back to when I hired my business coach and had no clue of what a coach was, that led me to get on the phone with women and listening to my business coach, but I had nothing to give. It was through my healing journey that I discovered all of this. And then I just kept going and I'm still in it. I still work on myself every single day. So I still read, you know, the books that are super impactful and every day. So I would say it's my healing journey that led me to knowing all this. And then specializing in this this niche, right? So this narcissistic personality disorder, which it's like the buzzword now, right? Narcissist. But it really is about wounded people attracting wounded people. And it's very, very deep. And on the surface, it really doesn't make sense, but like does attract like. And I didn't get into that relationship by accident, meaning I wasn't a whole complete person and I attracted a narcissistic person and that relationship abuse. I was wounded myself and I attracted another wounded person, right? Because that's how it goes. Although in the relationship, in every relationship, somebody's wounds are deeper than the other person's. And when we talk about a narcissistic personality disorder, their wounds are deeper. Definitely. They've been through, you know, the two scenarios that I gave you. They've been through some deep hurts by somebody, or some of them haven't even been through any traumas or dramas. They're just put on that pedestal. But definitely there's wounds there, and that's why two people get together. And then one turns into try to rescue and save the other person, and then the other person just resists it. And yeah, it's always a train wreck. Always ends up being a train wreck, unfortunately.
Relationships are so difficult. Marriages are hard, and I don't think there's an easy relationship. And friendships are difficult if you don't, you know, take care of them and attend to them. And I think you...
Well, they can be. They can be, but can I give an advice on a great book for your audience to read?
Yes, absolutely.
And it's not even mine. it's called The Mastery of Love. I tell everybody about this book. It's by Don Miguel Ruiz. He's done a series of books, and a lot of people have heard about the Four Agreements and the love language and all of that. But I'm telling you, this book, The Mastery of Love, it's all about relationships. It's the relationship that you have with yourself. He talks about that. And he also talks about the relationship you have in a partner. And I'm telling you, this book is a Bible, because he, first of all, the way he explains it, it's just so easy to comprehend. It's very bite-sized, digestible pieces, and it's so simple. He does a lot of metaphors. It's a great, great book. So I tell everybody about that book. You can even go on YouTube and put that title in, and you get the audio right there. But if you're a person like me where you like to hold it in your hand, it's on Amazon for under $10. It's a great, great book to have and use as a resource. So I also say, don't read it once. I read it like 20 plus times. Read it as many times as possible, because you're going to learn so much about yourself and relationships in that book.
Well, speaking of relationships, and I'll be sure to link that book below in the description. But I kind of wanted this to be my final question. We're coming up on the hour here, and I just kind of wanted to leave people with this sentiment. But what would you tell those out there struggling to love themselves? What would you say to them? What kind of advice would you give them?
About loving themselves? Mm-hmm. About self-love?
Yes.
Yeah. Focus on you. Focus on you. Give yourself the attention, the little girl or the little boy self that never got the attention. Right? So that's what I would say. Focus on you. Because the more you show up to be the best version of you, the more you're going to see your world start to turn around and change for the better. So to me, that's what self-love is giving yourself, all of you, there's so many aspects to us, the attention that he or she needs. That's what I would say.
You know what? I lied. That brings up another question for me. What was to you the most important first step, or that you've seen maybe through your coaching, that's the most important first step to either recognize or to get out or to heal? I know that's a really broad question, but.
So for me, it was, like I said, I didn't know how to help these women, mm-hmm. which led me to stop talking to them and just focus on me, which that was like a whole nother journey. And through those exercises and through, here's triggers. When I first did my trigger exercise, it's not mine, but the trigger exercise that I use on my clients, mm-hmm. that's what catapulted me into going, whoa, okay. It's like the pieces of the puzzle were put back in place and the picture made sense. So it's a trigger exercise that was shown to me and that I use on my clients. We all have triggers, right? Mm-hmm. But what triggers are is an old story or an open wound. And so that led me down the path of like, whoa, I was an abused woman. I was in an abusive relationship. Whoa, like all these woes. Mm-hmm. That's what I would say. Going through that trigger exercise woke me up.
That's interesting. That's, I've actually had that done to myself through therapy and had them, you know, make you either relive a traumatic moment or make you talk through it or I guess that mm-hmm. is always the time where I'm like, oh my gosh, wow. I mm-hmm. realize it now. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm. it puts everything in perspective, right? Yeah. It makes sense. And then you're like, okay, yeah.
Well, thank you. I know I told you I'd only keep you an hour, so thank you so much for doing this for me and being so so insightful.
thank you.
Yeah, no,
I'm glad I could help.
I think you will. A lot of people, I think you already have, obviously, but I think through this podcast, hopefully, we'll be able to reach some more people and maybe point them in the right direction, hopefully.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm open to doing a part two. If you want to do a part two, we could do another hour. You just let me know and I'm game. We could do it.
Absolutely. You know what? I would love to do that. And that concludes another episode of Far Betterment. Thank you to all my listeners. Thank you to all my subscribers. And thank you to everybody who's rated the podcast so far. If you haven't subscribed, you can find us on Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play, Apple, anywhere that you listen to podcasts, including where you're listening to podcasts right now. And please, please don't forget to give us a 5-star rating. It helps us tremendously. I can't tell you how much it helps us. If you want to give us anything less than 5 stars, please don't. There's really no reason.